Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored! Mucciola ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stastny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open!
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12. Matt Rocchio is our broadcast engineer. Brian Hoffman is our executive producer. We think we got a good show lined up for you today. Tony La Russa is going to join us in about 9 minutes, we believe, live from Oakland. He has a big event coming up in St. Louis on Wednesday night. Martin Kilcoyne will be in studio at 11 o'clock. And at about 11:40 today, we're going to check in with Chris Kerber, the voice of the Blues, as they prep for the Avalanche and another big night of hockey at the Enterprise Center. Normally, we open up with the monologue, but I just there's a couple of things I want to get to before we get to that. Then we'll talk to Tony, and then we'll probably delay the monologue till about 10:25, 10:30. That monologue is brought to you by our good friends at Gateway Motorsports Park. First up, I've talked about this before, and it's really got a great ending. There's a basketball player who played at Beaumont High School named Luther Burden. He went to St. Louis University. And he had one of the highest single-scoring seasons in SLU history. And he's one of the top 10, I think, all-time leading scorers. He was a shooting guard at about 6'1". And he was so good that the Indiana Pacers kept him on the team to the last cut. After that, Luther struggled a little bit with his life and had an issue with drugs where he ended up paying a price for it. But he and I got to know each other real well because we actually played against each other when I was at UMSL and SLU, and then we worked together for a solid summer in the Tiffany neighborhood off Grand Avenue where we worked with kids in the inner city and we put together a basketball team. So we would be together for like 6 hours every day for about 2 months. And he always was the most gentle of souls, and I love Luther. So this year, I'm watching one of our Friday night shows. I wasn't hosting it. And I think it was Ahmad Hicks, one of our reporters, and he's showing highlights of Cardinal Ritter and this freshman wide receiver by the name of Luther Burden Jr. And he goes 60 yards. He goes 50 yards. And I start to look at his stats, and he is a freshman, and he has 1,200 yards. He has like 12 touchdowns. As a freshman, and at the end of the year, they actually have an All-American class for each class in the country, and he makes freshman All-American. And so I'm wondering, that Luther Burden Jr., it got to be Luther's son. And then we go to a basketball game, and I'm watching his highlights, and he's a lot like his dad, and maybe even more athletic, maybe not as skilled quite yet. And so I called my friend Demetrius Johnson. And I said, any chance you could get me in touch with Luther? And DJ knows everybody. So we do this 6 or 7 minute story, and we talk to Coach Grauer, Pee Wee Leonard, Luther Jr. And one of the cool things about the story was the fact that Luther Jr. had never seen any video of Luther Sr. play. And so we got the tape. Coach Grauer, who's the most organized guy of all time, says, yeah, I'll bring you the VHS tape of Luther against Kansas. And then I went through some archives at Channel 5 and found some more video. So we put it on a laptop, and the two of them watched Luther senior play, and they were laughing and joking. It was just really cool. So anyway, Luther Sr. Worked two different jobs as a caregiver and then a third shift at Walmart. And the money wasn't great, but he had to get on and take a bunch of buses to get to all these jobs. And it was just kind of tough. And it also cost him a little bit of time with Luther Jr. So I asked Demetrius Johnson, I said, is there any way we could like improve his job situation? And Demetrius knows everybody. He's on the board of all these companies in St. Louis. And he goes to work on this. And he gets Luther a job at Schnucks, which almost doubled his pay. And the conditions are tremendous. And Luther calls me this morning. And he says, I got the job. And he could not have been more excited. And I was almost like getting emotional listening to him talk about how excited he was. And so I texted Demetrius and Dave Peacock, who had a role in it, and Coach Grauer, who's always stood by Luther. And just it's just a great story. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate Demetrius Johnson. You know, for some of you out there, you think that Demetrius is a little bit of a rabble-rouser. Well, he may stir it up a little bit, but his heart is always in the right place. And I'm just so happy for Luther. All right, now this next story is not as good. Ben Fred came down last night, and we were talking about this, and it's just insane. I don't know if you've heard, but Don Marsh was a longtime anchor at Fox 2. Very well respected, seemingly a really nice fellow. So in the sunset of his career, he gets a job as a host at age 80. I mean, he's 80 now, at St. Louis Public Radio. That's KWMU, I believe, and that's a station I used to work for when I was at UMSL. So anyway, he has as a guest Karen Foss, our legend from Channel 5. Don Marsh is 80, and Karen Foss is 75. So she comes in, and Don Marsh says, "You look great. You look great." So Foss, 75, wrote on Facebook, now I'm reading out of the post, that she accepted the greeting from Marsh as a common way for those of us who are aged to greet each other. "As a woman who has long argued for the equitable treatment of women, I am highly alert to sexism and discrimination, and I sensed absolutely none of that in his greeting." Now, let me quick little side story. Anytime we had any type of like female related story or female issue that somehow connected sports, I would go back to her desk and I'd say, "Karen, do you think this is okay to say it like this?" Because she was very sensitive about it and she was always professional about it. And she told me, "No, you should do it this way." And I always, you know, listened to everything she said. So the post was shared more than 800 times. It got on Facebook. And this is basically what happened. That Madeline Painter, the station's director of marketing and digital media, said in an interview that Marsh was an amazing host and he was never asked to resign, nor did we want him to resign. But Marsh told the Post-Dispatch that a producer had complained about his greeting of Foss. He said he was called into a meeting with two managers before going on the air Wednesday, in which one of them said they wanted to put this behind us. And I said, "Are you basically saying what I did was wrong?" He said the manager made a gesture with his hand like it's right on the edge. And I said, "That's it. I'm done." So Joe Holloman has been the reporter that's been all over this story. So here's the thing. I guess if Don Marsh could have his job if he wanted it. But he didn't want to work in a job situation where you can't say to a longtime friend who's 75 years old, who does happen to look really good for her age, "You look great." And I don't blame Don Marsh at all. I mean, what have we come to that you can't say, "You look great"? Is that the most insane thing ever? Oh, my goodness. It's just like, I'm going to go to Channel 5 today and somebody, if they say hi, hi. And I'm just going to my office and start typing. I mean, this is what it is. Are you kidding me? You can't say you look great? Oh, my goodness. I'd love to get a response. What do you think, Matt Rocchio?
Yeah, that's a slippery slope if I've ever seen one. It's completely innocuous. It's not over the line. It's not even bordering the line, I think. Even if you take out the fact that they're saying like you look good is as Karen Foss put it, the way people who are more aged are just like, hey, you're holding up well, you look healthy. Even if you're younger, I think it's an extremely innocuous thing to say to somebody. It's just being polite.
Yeah, or if you see an attractive person at work, oh, that's a great looking outfit. That's a good looking suit. That's a great dress. Oh my goodness. Wow, the PC people. All right, let's switch topics. And welcome to the program, the legend, the Hall of Famer, Tony La Russa, live from Oakland. Tony, good to be with you. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. Better to come back opening day.
Let's see. Is his audio okay there? Let's try that one more time. Tony, let me try it one more time. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's perfect. That's great. Boy, you got to be excited. I know you've been a part of opening days in quite a few stadiums, but are we wrong in saying there's nothing like the one in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course, trying to be objective, and that's hard. But I do believe that the Cardinals do more to honor, you know, what opening day represents, the history and going forward than anybody. And I just heard a couple of days ago that if I heard it right, it would be 16 guys in red jackets out there on Thursday. That's incredible.
You have a big event coming up on Wednesday, the day before opening day. We'll get to that in just a moment. I'm wondering, when you were managing, did you try to educate your players on those guys in the red jacket, or do you think they already knew?
No. I think you make a mistake. You're assuming the young guys have a feel for the history of the game. The more recent guys, you know, they would know about it. I'm sure the players today in that Cardinal uniform, they know who Jim Edmonds is and Ray Langford and, you know, Mark McGwire guys. But the Hall of Famers, they've been there, you know, before their time. Those are the ones that I think. In fact, we used to run videos sometimes in the clubhouse just to show, you know, the greatness of Bob Gibson and Lou Brock and so forth.
When the Cardinals made the move for Paul Goldschmidt, the first thing I remembered was when you went to Arizona, you saying that he's like the closest thing to Albert, or you immediately compared him to Albert. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, I think as the, you know, if you know Albert, once you get to know Albert, it was more than just the stats and the baseball side. I mean, he was everything of that, but he was also the consummate high character type who came to work every day, came to work for the right reasons, there to help teammates, and also would want to be part of an organization on and off the field. And, you know, Paul is that kind of golden character guy as well. I mean, he really is very, very solid. And he reminds you of Albert in a lot of ways. You know, he plays the game defensively, runs the bases.
He's going to be returning to St. Louis for the first time since he went to Anaheim, and it's going to be June 21st to June 23rd. I got to believe, you know, even though it's just an at-bat by a member of the Angels, it's going to be one of the most special moments, I think, in that stadium's history.
Well, I agree. And, I mean, I've been excited, but also concerned because, yeah, I think everybody who was a Cardinal fan was disappointed when he left. And, you know, I've tried to say it with my two cents whenever I could. I wouldn't blame the Cardinals or Albert. It's just the way the game is played now. But, in fact, you know, I already told Dave with the Red Sox that day I want to be there, you know, up in the stands, and I want to help celebrate Albert's return to Busch Stadium.
You have a relationship with Mike Schilt. What jumps out at you about his personality?
Well, he's got, you know, I've never played for him. or been on his coaching staff, but I've been around him. And he has a way of connecting with people because he's sincere. And a lot of that sincerity has to go. He's very driven to be a top-flight baseball man and put players in a position to win. And I think that, you know, I've used it a couple of times with other people, and Mike Fitz as well. You know, George Kissel, he graded people on whether they were willing to learn and keep learning. And Mike would get 100% on that.
I want to ask you, too, about the man he succeeded, Mike Matheny, who you're also extremely close to. Statistically, he was a very successful manager. How do you evaluate Mike moving forward and the opportunities he could have?
Well, I just think that, you know, sometimes things are difficult to explain. And one, I was disappointed. I mean, I want to always be honest. It's not that I don't support the front office or ownership of the Cardinals, but I looked at the record that Mike had, and any manager would love to have that kind of success. So I'm sorry, I'm having to get in the car, but I just think that, you know, it turned out that I have respect for the decision-making in baseball ops with Mo and Bill at the top, and, you know, and they thought there's a change to be made, but I certainly think that Mike had a very, very successful tenure there. And, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, I know I was always supported, you know, every place I looked at. And I just hope that Mike had that same kind of support.
You know, some people put a little bit of blame on the way he dealt with the media. Not that he was mean-spirited, but I want you to elaborate about just how important it is because, you know, you did an unbelievable job of, you know, before every game, print media, television media, Mike Shannon, then after the game, everybody. So that's 162 games a year, not counting spring training, where you did 4 interviews per day. I mean, that is really an essential element of being a manager, isn't it?
It is, and it's more so every year because there's more and more coverage, which is good for our game. I mean, that's why people, you know, they're anxious to hear about it. So I do believe that I was very lucky when I started managing. My own first owner was Bill Veeck, and when I had problems with it, he said, look, every time you have a chance to talk to the media, you're talking to the fans. So take your opportunity to give the message that you want. And also, by the way, the players are listening to it, and there's, you know, I don't know how to, relate it to Mike, because I know what a high, you know, we talk about Goldie, you know, what a high character type Mike Matheny is. And, you know, he was very strong at protecting the players and didn't want to give much. But I wish, you know, I could have given him that advice if that would have helped him, because as we all know, when you're around Mike and in a relaxed basis, you know, he's just a wonderful guy.
Did you make a habit of, like, communicating with your players, all of them, day to day, or is that impossible to talk to 25 guys every day? I know you had the fungo bat. You're out in the outfield all the time.
Well, I think that nowadays communication is where it starts and what you communicate. You know, you just don't go and say, how are you feeling? And, you know, you stunk yesterday, and that's okay. I mean, when you communicate, sometimes it was a pat on the back. Sometimes it was a pop on the butt. But I do think that, you know, at the end of the game, I always review the whole roster, and there was always a handful to a dozen guys that you felt some time of pat or pop was necessary.
You had great relationships with almost all your players throughout the years, but the ones that you had a bad relationship with, what would you like to take back? Or do you ever, like, regret anything in terms of relationship with a single player?
Well, I think in St. Louis, you know, the two or three, that the two most important ones were Ozzy and Scott Rowland. You know, Ozzy, I was very unfortunate, I think, because I totally respected and made sure that I did whatever I could to make he got the honors that he deserved. But, you know, it was a point of, you know, at the, you know, you're a superstar towards the end of your career. And I had company American League, and I had Don Baylor and Dave Parker and you know, and Greg Luzinski and Carl Fisk towards the end of their career. So I knew they respect those, but that didn't go well. And then the other one that really bothers me the most, I think, is Scott Rolen, because he was a great player for us. And I kind of got in the middle of, he was not happy with the health care that he got or the injury care. And I felt that he was being unfair to our organization, and that caused some tension between us. But since then, you know, when Scott was in Cincinnati, we would wave at each other. And, you know, I see Ozzie now, we shake hands. So but you're right when you say, I mean, with an exception or two, I mean, I was very, very fortunate, actually, in Chicago, Oakland, St. Louis. I mean, we worked to have a family brotherhood, and everybody on it was a part of it. And if it didn't fit, you know, you weren't going to be comfortable, and you went someplace else.
Nobody is panicking now that the Cardinals are 1-3, but your 04 team started 1-3. The 11 team started 2-6. What would you tell fans in St. Louis who are a little concerned?
Well, the Boston Red Sox are 1-3, too. And we got all the, you know. I think that it's amazing. Every season is different. That was one of the most fascinating things for any of us. No matter what you did the year before, the next year is going to be different somewhere. There are going to be different challenges. In this particular case, I mean, you know, they're 1-3. They get three outs in the ninth inning, and they're 2-2. But I think the way they competed, well, they competed a lot better against Milwaukee than we did against the Seattle Mariners, and nobody here is panicking. So I wouldn't panic. I just think that I would look at how they compete. This is what Cardinal fans do. They look at, are you giving us everything you got? And there's a certain quality of play. And I think that team, with the people they have on it, whether it's in the clubhouse or around the situation, they're going to play hard every day, give you their very best, and then you see how the score shakes out.
One more thought before we talk about your great event. You were the first person I thought of, Tony, when I heard the terrible news about Tom Seaver battling dementia. You told one of the great stories about Seaver at the end of his career, at the beginning of your career, when you had to take him out. Can you tell our listening audience about that one?
Well, it'll be quick, but it was opening day of 1984, the first year with us. And we were playing in Milwaukee. And us as the White Sox. And, you know, it was snowy and cold, and he gave us five innings, and we had a two-run lead. And in the bottom of the sixth, two guys got on base, and I went out and got him. I thought, you know, he'd given us another. And then we also, you know, Gantner was up, and I bought Juan Augusto, and it didn't work. And when I talked to him the next day, he said, why'd you take me on? And I said, well, I thought you'd give us enough. But also, you know, I thought Augusto, he's really a cat off the mound. And he said, Tony, he said, you know, I'm 100. I could go 0-20 for 5 years and still be over 500 as a pitcher. I says, I know that, Tom. He said, do you think I had to feel my position to get some of those wins? Do you think I played pepper every day in spring training because I knew that? I said, I understand, Mr. Seaver. And so the only thing that was different, I think the fans would appreciate this. I was taught never to ask a pitcher how he felt because they're all going to be heroes. And I followed that my whole career. You walk out and ask Carpenter, his arm may be falling off, and he said, yeah, I'm ready to go. Tom Seaver is the only guy that when we discussed it, we had a plan where I would come out because he says, you know, I'm getting older and sometimes I save my bullets. And just ask me and I'll say, no, I've got some saved. And I turn around and walk back, or he say, if you're out here because you don't like what you see, and make your decision. So Tom Seaver was the smartest pitcher ever been around, and that's just an ugly term because he has so much to offer. It saddens all of us.
All right, Wednesday night, April 3rd, 2019, 6 o'clock to 8:30. It's Wine and Whiskers, specialty wines, craft beers, and hors d'oeuvres. Tell me about this special event to benefit the Animal Rescue Foundation.
Well, we've been doing it for years, and, you know, we still during the winter warm-up. Now we do it smarter before opening day, and I talked to Dan Farrell about it. You know, the Cardinals are very cooperative. It's part of how we start the season now, and ours are part of it. There will be, you know, several hundred people there, and it's very informal. There's a lot of socializing, and, you know, we're going to have some, as always, Mike Shannon always stops by. He's wonderful. And he and I get on the stage there and say hello and get each other back and forth. But I understand that they're going to be, we'll have some surprises with some of our, mostly our past players, because the team has just come back from the road trip. So it's all the benefit of Arif. Arif is now in his 29th year, I'm so proud of the work we do and the way we keep trying to be innovative to do more.
And I think there's still some tickets available. I have a phone number, 925-296-3118, 925-296-3118. Any other way to get tickets for this one?
Yeah, I think, I'm not a killer this way, Frank, but I think if people go to the website, arflife.org, I think that they would see that there's a way to order tickets that way. And I do think there are some tickets left. But it's gotten to be a lot of fun. And like I say, people really like it because it reminds everybody that tomorrow, the next day, rather, we're going to get at it again, and that's reason to celebrate.
Great stuff, and some good food, too. Primo's Italian Garage, Nothing Bundt Cakes, Urban Chestnut Brewery, a lot of great St. Louis establishments on hand. Tony, thanks so much. We'll see you on Wednesday night.
Okay, Frank, thank you.
All right, that's the Hall of Famer, Tony La Russa, joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Before we break, I want to address this one text. Tony TV at the end of games was must-see TV.
True.
He treated the press horribly. What an arrogant, self-absorbed person. Sir, I got to tell you something. You couldn't be any more wrong. Did he have instances where he got on us and one time smashed a bat and one time stood up and looked like he was going to go with a newspaper columnist? Yeah. But we're talking 16 years. And if you talk to any reporter who was there on a pretty regular basis over a long period of time, and you ask them, how was Tony to deal with? They'll all say he was great. He was great. And as I mentioned before, every day, 162 times a year, you talk to the print media. Then you talk to radio TV. Then you talk to Mike Shannon. And then you talk to everybody afterwards. Four times a day, you're answering questions. And La Russa, for the most part, was outstanding. And also, it's like the old Larry King line, the best interview was Sinatra because he had a pissed off trait. We'd like a little edge, and he was great. So, all right, let's take a short time out. When we come back, we'll have our opening monologue right after this.